We recorded this episode on April 2nd, and we did it while self-isolating at our homes because of the novel coronavirus. I'm sure many of you are probably doing the same thing right now.
So you might hear some background noise that we usually don't have in the studio, but that's part of the new normal that we're all adjusting to as we stay home to help flatten the curve during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Of course, the new coronavirus and COVID-19, the disease it causes, are very much on everyone's mind, and Live Science is covering the latest news and updates from every state in the U.S., as well as the CDC, the World Health Organization, and from researchers around the world.
But we also hope that by continuing to bring you Life's Little Mysteries, we can all still be reminded of the amazing science that's all around us.
So thanks for listening. Keep safe and stay healthy. Hello, and welcome to Life's Little Mysteries with Live Science. I'm Gina Briner, editor-in-chief at Live Science.
And I'm Mindy Weisberger, a senior writer at Live Science. The world can be a pretty mysterious place, and we at Live Science love to ask and answer questions about mysteries big and small, about ancient civilizations, our planet and solar system, the plants and animals that live alongside us, our bodies and how they work, and the technologies that we use every day.
Each episode of this podcast introduces mysterious questions, and we think the answers will really surprise you.
We'll also hear about scientists who are performing cutting-edge research in labs and in fieldwork around the world to answer these and other intriguing scientific questions.
In today's episode of Life's Little Mysteries, we'll take a closer look at mysterious cosmic objects that have a gravitational pull so strong that not even light can escape, and that's black holes.
So, Gina, what exactly are black holes? Because it sounds like you say black hole and you think of like a void or an empty expanse or an absence of something rather than an actual thing.
I know. And that's the sort of counterintuitive thing about black holes. They're actually very massive and dense. They're the exact opposite of empty space.
Right.
So you could imagine a star that's 10 times the size of our sun, and you squeeze that into an area around the size of New York City. That would be a black hole.
Right. And the gravitational pull of these objects, because they're so dense, is extremely powerful. So nothing can escape it, not even light.
And when things enter black holes, we think of them as sucking in all this matter and material, but actually they're not sucking anything in because they're not a vacuum. So objects and space and light, even light, are drawn toward them because of that gravity. It's like they have these gravitational arms that are basically clutching anything that gets into their reach and pulling it in.
Okay, so basically what you're saying is that black holes don't suck.
They don't.
Okay. So where do black holes come from?
So most black holes are basically the corpses, the remnants of large, massive stars that die in these explosive events called supernovas. And as they're dying, gravity takes over and basically their entire core just collapses in on itself into this very, very dense point of this singularity.
Right. So essentially you're getting what was once an enormous star that's being compressed into a much, much smaller object.
Exactly. And it happens really fast. Apparently, after a star collapses, a small black hole, at least, can form in seconds.
And then after black holes form, they can get even bigger by colliding with neutron stars, which are like another form of dead star. So after a star goes supernova, if it doesn't form a black hole, it can form something called a neutron star. And when black holes collide with those, then they can get even bigger.
And black holes can get pretty big.
How big are they, Gina?
Well, they're so big that they're called supermassive black holes, and they can have masses greater than 1 million suns. So we were talking about smaller black holes that came from stars 10 times the size of our sun. This is 1 million suns crammed together.
Wow.
And every big galaxy is thought to have one of these lurking at its core, at its center of galaxies.
Right. So you have these enormous objects, these supermassive black holes, and there's one at the center of every large galaxy, which includes, of course, the Milky Way, which is our home galaxy, and the supermassive black hole
right there,
yeah, that's got a mass that's the equivalent to about 4 million suns.
And we can't see them, which is crazy.
No,
They're hiding in our galaxy.
Well, we did. Actually, scientists have recently been able for the first time to capture the first direct image of a black hole, which is something that we're going to talk about in a little bit. But let's get back to our, so we're talking about the Milky Way. Let's look a little closer to home, to, you know, the star, obviously, that's at the center of our solar system, the sun. So could our sun become a black hole?
Well, the sun, like other stars, will eventually die, as all stars do, but it's not going to become a black hole because it's just not big enough to explode and collapse under its own gravity.
Okay, so it's going to become something else.
Right. So instead of a black hole, it will end up as a dense stellar corpse, but this will be called a white dwarf. So it's not big enough to become this giant pulling object that basically doesn't let anything escape, but it will live on as a corpse called a white dwarf.
Okay. Well, we don't have to worry about that for at least a few billion years. Is that right?
A long time.
A very long time. Yeah. Okay. So you were saying before, yeah. So black holes for a very long time, until very recently, scientists weren't able to directly image them at all, but they did know that they were there. So how long have scientists known about black holes?
Centuries, which is amazing since we can't see them, but they were predicted by Albert Einstein. His famous theory of general relativity predicted black holes existed.
Because the gravity from these massive objects, because they're so massive, their gravitational pull is so strong that it actually warps the fabric of space-time. So the greater an object's mass, the stronger its gravitational pull. And Einstein's equations showed that gravity from a black hole can bend light and space. So even though scientists couldn't directly observe black holes, they could see how the light bent around them.
Right.
And close to a black hole, right. So matter is heating up to millions of degrees, so it's actually visible in X-rays.
One form of imagery that I like to use to sort of visualize how black holes are distorting this fabric of space and time is sort of a sumo wrestler. And some scientists have used this analogy as well. But the sumo wrestler is like the black hole. And as it bounds around on the mat of the fabric of space-time, it basically distorts it. And so black holes distort space. And so this basically sumo wrestler, scientists can detect the deformation and how it affects space. So they can see how it affects dust and gas and even nearby stars that are sort of that mat that the sumo wrestler is rolling around on.
That's a great analogy. I actually hadn't heard that one before. I like that.
Yeah, it's helped me a lot.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, black holes are fascinating and we write about them a lot at Live Science. And in fact, you might even say that we find them irresistibly attractive.
We do.
So in this episode, you're going to hear about some of the biggest black hole findings of the past year.
And for today's mystery, we'll look at how black holes get their names and why most of those names are a little less than stellar.
2019 really was a breakthrough year for black hole research. In April, almost exactly a year ago, scientists directly imaged a black hole for the first time. And they captured this absolutely astonishing view of black hole M87 at the center of the Virgo A galaxy. But that is not all. There were many more incredible discoveries about black holes last year. And joining us today to talk about some of them is Tia Ghose, Assistant Managing Editor at Live Science. Tia, thanks for being here today.
Yeah, my pleasure.
So let's start with the image of the black hole. Why was this such a big deal?
Well, I mean, black holes have been predicted by Einstein's theory of general relativity for, you know, almost a century or more. But this was the first time we had actually got glimpses of one. This particular black hole was a supermassive black hole at the center of Virgo A galaxy. And in order to get it, they needed to combine images from telescopes all around the world over 2 years. And that effort was called the Event Horizon Telescope. So they sort of stitched together the data from all of these different telescopes. And what you see in the image isn't actually the center of the black hole, but you see the accretion disk around it, where matter, as it's sort of swirling the drain, is rubbing against each other and emitting radiation. And that's pretty amazing. So
there was also a discovery that black holes have hair. What makes a black hole hairy?
Well, so basically the idea of hair is it's not actually hair. It's the idea is that people used to think that a black hole just sucks in all the matter near enough to it, and that's it, right? You can't tell anything from the outside about this black hole, about what went into it at all. But based on Stephen Hawking's theories that there's sort of Hawking radiation at the edges of black holes, there's this theory that they might have features, essentially, that they call hair, which tell you something about what went into the black hole and distinguish it from other black holes so that you can sort of say they're not truly featureless. But we haven't really shown for sure that black holes have hair, but a lot of theoretical predictions have shown that they could have hair. If they do have hair, they might go bald quickly, that information sort of might disappear over time. So it's really a complicated idea, but basically normally a black hole is only described by three things: how big they are, their mass, how fast they're spinning, and their electric charge. But if they have hair, that means that there's some other information that's on the edges of the black hole that could potentially tell you about what went into it.
I just have to say, I love the idea of black holes going bald.
Yes.
We know that black holes can be enormous, supermassive, in fact. But in November 2019, scientists found a black hole that was a whole lot bigger than what researchers thought was even possible. It was about 70 times bigger than our sun. How is that black hole able to get so big?
Okay, so that black hole is an interesting story because the news was reported that it was impossibly big in November. And then about a few weeks later, another group of researchers found that this black hole was not actually that big and that there were sort of errors in the way that they measured light from different stars. And if you account for that, it's likely that it's sort of in the range you expect. And that black hole, you know, it was not actually impossibly big compared to a supermassive black hole anyways. It's just that there are certain types of black holes that are not at the centers of galaxies, and based on the chemical elements that are around them, you would expect them to be only so big. And this one seemed at first glance to be bigger than that. But we now know that probably it's in the range that you'd expect given the chemical elements that surround it and its environment.
Let's look at the other end of the scale, because as long as we're talking about size, scientists also learned that black holes could be tiny for a black hole, that is. What can you tell us about this strange new class of mini black holes?
Okay, so basically, this is an idea that instead of being as big as Virgo A, which is at the center of a galaxy, it might have the mass of like a mountain and be tiny, maybe the size of a city. But, you know, searching for something like this is difficult because obviously black holes emit no light. So how do you look for something that's really tiny, really dense, and doesn't emit X-rays as other types of larger black holes would? So those would be sort of invisible to us. But a group that was using the Apache Point Observatory was able to look at many different wavelengths of light from objects, specifically stars. And they looked at how the wavelengths were shifted, and they noticed that the wavelengths were shifted in a certain way where they found one massive dark object that seemed to be sort of tied gravitationally to a really giant star 10,000 light years away. That would be a star that is in the constellation Auriga. So the object they would estimate is about three times the mass of our sun. So that's not the size that you would expect for a neutron star, and it's not big enough to be what we've known of as black holes, but it seems like it is a black hole, that it's probably a black hole that's sort of locked in a gravitational embrace with a star.
In fact, didn't researchers find there might be a smallish black hole hiding out in our own solar system?
So what you're talking about is the Planet Nine theory,
yeah,
which is essentially, there's some objects maybe out there in our solar system and we don't know what it is. And some researchers are proposing that actually it's not as a planet at all. It's a black hole, and it would be the size of a grapefruit if it exists. But right now, we have no evidence for it. It's just a speculation. You know, physicists love to come up with really wild speculations, and that's definitely one of them that's pretty wild, but it's possible. It's definitely possible.
Yeah, grapefruit size sounds pretty small.
It does. It sounds pretty small. Of course, you know, it's stuffing a bunch of mass into that tiny grapefruit size, so it would still be quite heavy. And so that's what's interesting about it, is that it would be 10 to 20 times Earth's mass, even though it's the size of a grapefruit, which is kind of mind-blowing.
As you mentioned earlier, scientists have known about black holes since Einstein predicted that they would exist. But a recent study actually suggests that black holes may not be black holes at all. What does that even mean? And if they're not black holes, what are they?
Yeah, so this is one of the wildest ideas that I think has come out this year and maybe one of the most intriguing. So instead of being a black hole, which as we know of is a singularity, an infinitely small and dense point at its heart, it is in fact a thing that's sort of stuffed with dark energy, which again is this hypothetical thing at this point. We haven't proven it exists, but most researchers think it's there. And dark energy is thought to be this mysterious force that's pushing at the bounds of the universe, making it expand ever faster. So the reason that this idea is appealing is because singularities are essentially like breaking the math. When you get to the heart of a black hole, like there's no, the equations for relativity break down. They just give you sort of an error. But if you use this theory, then you can sort of solve for the idea that there's sort of a singularity at its heart, because instead of having the singularity, you have these like little pockets of energy that sort of account for the acceleration of the universe. And what's interesting about it is that this isn't just a theory. A lot of times you could come up with hundreds, dozens of theories in physics that don't necessarily prove anything. This actually has some evidence that you could search for if it's true. Basically, the idea would be that you could look for effects of this in gravitational wave observatories, like the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory, which is like this giant observatory that's looking for ripples in space-time, and it's spanning the globe. So that's one thing I really like about this theory, is that they didn't just do the math and show like, oh, wow, this could be true. They looked for a way to show whether it is or is not true.
I've been talking to Tia Ghose, assistant managing editor at Live Science. You can find out all about these black hole discoveries and more in her article, The Biggest Black Hole Findings of 2019 on Live Science. The link is in the show notes. Tia, thanks so much for joining us.
Pleasure to talk to you.
With all that's going on right now, we all need to remind ourselves to take breaks from the news. An incredible resource for us and for our families is the streaming service, The Great Courses Plus.
Oh my God, absolutely. Taking breaks is so important. And with The Great Courses Plus, you get unlimited access to thousands of lectures on so many different topics, from the science of Earth and planets to philosophy and psychology and economics and animals.
There's just about anything you want on The Great Courses Plus, from pro skills to personal interests to hobbies. You can indulge your curiosity in art history, even how to play a guitar to improve at yoga.
And the thing about The Great Courses Plus is that these lectures are hosted by university professors, respected educators and experts, so you know that you are getting information that you can trust. We recommend checking out the course Life in the World's Oceans, which is made in partnership with the Smithsonian. So there's so many marine habitats that you can explore. You can check out coral reefs. You can learn about the deep ocean. You can see what weird adaptations animals have to survive diving miles below the surface and how they survive in the cold and the dark of the ocean depths.
One of my favorite parts or sessions in this course is the one on sharks and rays. And the professor does a great job of breaking down the history of sharks, which are part of a group called Chondrichthyans. And the sharks, skates, and rays, the professor was saying, date back almost 450 million years.
Wow. And the best thing about this is that you can watch or listen to these courses anytime through the Great Courses Plus app.
And you can even toggle in between video and audio. And you can download.
And speaking of streaming, this is also something that you can stream the videos to your TV so you can watch them as a family, which is really convenient.
And now is the perfect time to start.
Why is it the perfect time to start?
The Great Courses Plus is giving our listeners this great offer, an entire month of unlimited access for free. Sign up today using our special URL to get started.
Go to thegreatcoursesplus.com/LLM. That's LLM for Life's Little Mysteries. Remember, thegreatcoursesplus.com/LLM.
No question, black holes are amazing, only more so as scientists unravel more of their secrets. But one thing about black holes that's less than amazing is their names.
I know, right? Planets and moons, you know, get these dramatic names inspired by gods and goddesses, you know, like the god of war and the goddess of love. And, you know, what do black holes get?
Nothing, really. I mean, for example, the black hole at the center of galaxy M87 is M87's black hole or M87 asterisk.
Yeah, that's just not very exciting.
Not so exciting.
No, it has more names, though, right? I mean, that particular black hole actually has several names, and they're so much more exciting
not
than M87.
So snappy. So there's NGC 4486 is one of them, and there's a few others, I think.
Yeah, UGC 7654, ARP 152, 3C274. Yeah, these are all such exciting, fun names.
They mean something to astronomers, of course, but it seems kind of unfair for these objects that are arguably the most exciting objects in the universe to have these sort of blah names.
Exactly.
So for this episode's mystery, we ask, if black holes are so awesome, why are their names usually so boring?
Well, where do their names even come from? So whose responsibility is it to name black holes?
Well, for any space object, for a name to be officially recognized by astronomers, that name needs to be approved by the International Astronomical Union, or the IAU.
Who are those people?
Well, the organization was founded in 1919, so not that long ago, and it established naming systems so that objects could be, quote, unambiguously identified and everyone knows exactly which object is being talked about in a given research paper. And that was according to Morgan Hollis, a spokesperson for the Royal Astronomical Society in the UK.
All right. So this is a way so that there's a format that everyone sticks to so that everyone knows that when they're referring to, you know, one black hole, that they're all talking about the same one.
Exactly. And so it applies to stars and planets. It applies to asteroids. The IAU actually created the definition of a planet, and it was that definition that ultimately kicked Pluto out of the so-called major planet club. So they were
that was not a very popular decision. Okay, so there are these rules. So how does that apply to black holes?
There are no such protocols in place yet for black holes, it turns out.
Oh, okay. Well, why? How come?
Partly that's because they just haven't been directly observed. They can't be. They hadn't been directly observed, actually, until recently.
Right. So yeah, we were just talking about that with Tia, about how in April of 2019, scientists were able to directly image a black hole for the first time. This was captured by the Event Horizon Telescope Project, or EHT. And the picture, which was absolutely astonishing, was just this. It was this like this glowing orange ring, or, you know, or a donut, I guess, depending on how you look at it. And so which was not technically not an image of the black hole itself, but of the event horizon.
Right. And it was astonishing and stunning and amazing, mostly because this was the first time anyone had ever imaged a black hole or the black hole's shadow, its event horizon. And it took hundreds of scientists to actually get this image. So it was pretty incredible for what it stood for.
Right. And okay, so we're now at a point where scientists have a little more to go on. But let's backtrack a little, because so the IAU has only been around since 1919. So so what did astronomers even do before then?
So pre-IAU, objects in space were widely known by their numbers. And these numbers were recorded in catalogs, and that was all created by astronomers like Charles Messier, who lived in France during the late 18th century to the early 19th century.
Okay, so Charles Messier and others, they documented observations, they numbered objects sequentially, and then they created these catalogs that just had these lists of observations. And so other astronomers just started, when they were talking to each other about these different objects, they started referring to those objects by their catalog numbers.
Right, because there weren't, you know, this was a burgeoning field that was just coming into being, and there weren't tons of numbers, so they could sort of handle that. The catalog was published in 1771, and it contains 110 objects. And there's one pretty interesting object in there that we were just talking about.
And that's the black hole that was imaged in 2019.
Right. So that's the M87. And it was 87th on the list was this galaxy. And it's become pretty big. And so its name is M87 is pretty well known now.
Okay. So when you call something M87, it's because it's number 87 in Messier's catalog.
Exactly.
But the M87 black hole was already pretty well known. So the astronomers that were working on imaging it, they generally were all just referred to it as M87. although occasionally some refer to it as 3C274. I guess only the ones that felt like they knew it really, really well.
They were very close to that black hole.
No, right. Yes, exactly.
Over time, more observations of black holes have come online as equipment becomes more sensitive. So do they all get these names, these clunky names in a catalog still?
Well, not all of them. So I actually talked to Michael Shara, who's a curator and professor with the Department of Astrophysics at the American Museum of Natural History in New York City. And he told me that black holes that didn't have catalog names were usually referred to by their coordinates in space. So they're, in other words, their celestial longitude and latitude, or also known as the right ascension and declination. And these coordinate names also, like catalog names, they also include a few letters at the beginning to show which satellite found the black hole. So it's a combination, again, it's a combination of letters and numbers that is not just doesn't have the same oomph to it as a name that's, that evokes an idea or, something about how amazing or how wonderful these are. So, but for now, at least, that's the most practical approach for identification, because there are millions of X-ray sources that could potentially be supermassive black holes. And it just wouldn't be practical to assign names to all of them.
Right. So right now, are black holes basically stuck with these boring names?
Well, there's definitely a precedent for celestial objects acquiring more evocative names in addition to astronomers' letters and numbers. So, and we've written about this on Live Science. There are right. some, like, there's, for example, there are some galaxies that have gotten these more interesting or these more, more evocative common names based on what they look like.
So there's the galaxy M104, which looks like a wide-brimmed hat and is sometimes referred to as the Sombrero Galaxy. And I think my favorite is the Jellyfish Galaxy. And this one is, it's located in the constellation Triangulum Austral. And it really looks like a jellyfish. And it looks like it's sort of swimming in stars. It's this barred spiral galaxy. And it has streamers of stars that seem to drift sort of like jellyfish tentacles. Anyway, it's beautiful to look at.
No, that's amazing. One of my favorites is, its official name is Nebula Barnard 3, which looks kind of like a horse's head. So it's known as the Horsehead Nebula. And yeah, this is also just this, the images of it just show this really, just this, this beautiful shape and, with the dust and gas in space. And and it's just something that's just stunning, stunning to look at.
And what about M87? Let's go back to M87. Are there any cool names for this black hole?
Yeah. So M87 does have a more dramatic name. And it was given to the black hole. It was announced after the image, the glowing orange donut image, was released. And the name is Povehi, which means embellished dark source of unending creation in the indigenous Hawaiian language. And it was selected by Larry Kimura, a Hawaiian language professor at the University of Hawaii in Hilo.
That's beautiful. I don't think I could say it, but it's a really pretty name.
And so Professor Kimura, he chose the name together with astronomers at two Hawaiian observatories that participated in the EHT International collaboration.
The one that imaged the black hole? That's the EHT?
Yes, the one that created that, the glowing orange donut image. And it comes from the two Hawaiian words that describe concepts in ancient chants that are related to the creation of the Hawaiian universe.
Now, that's a cool name for a black hole. So maybe
it
there's
really
hope
is.
For black holes.
Maybe I think this is actually a really good example that of the possibility that maybe one day they'll finally all have names that are as majestic and as awe-inspiring as they deserve. Thanks for joining us today for Life's Little Mysteries with Live Science. Today's black hole mystery, Black Holes Are Awesome, Why Are Their Names Usually So Boring?, is available as a Life's Little Mysteries article on our website, livescience.com.
Follow us on Facebook and Twitter for even more Life's Little Mysteries and for the latest science news. You can also join the conversation in our Live Science forums, where you can pose Life's Little Mysteries questions of your own, or even suggest topics for upcoming podcast episodes. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, so you don't miss out on new episodes.
What will we talk about next? It's a mystery.
Literally. It'll be another Life's Little Mystery.
Life's Little Mysteries is produced in conjunction with Audioboom as part of their Audioboom Originals Network.